All right, welcome to Colonial Outcast, a show about empire and how it's bad for all of us. This episode is being released Wednesday, May 7th in the evening. Israel has invaded Rafah finally, and we're going to talk about that. How insane that quote-unquote military and political action is, debunk some propaganda, and contemplate how great humans and power can be. My name is Greg Stoker. I'm a former U.S. Army Ranger. I'm joined by series regular Travis, a former field grade artillery officer, and co-host Mark Wayne, and we all have various avenues of military experience. Welcome on, guys. We're going to try to post this as quick as possible, so we're playing with live ammo. Thanks for coming on again.
It's great to be here, Greg. Thank you for having us.
Indeed, you are most welcome. So, just diving right in, how to contextualize the timeline leading up to this devastating genocidal assault on Rafah that has no defined military goals or operational objectives that can be reasonably achieved? Well, let me throw out some dates. Again, it's the evening of May 7th. It's currently 8 hours ahead, so I think that would be like 4 a.m. in Gaza because it's on Cairo time. So we'll be doing another episode in the morning for updates about what happens tonight. Okay, but some dates. So on the same day of America's Met Gala, which is the hub of the glitterati and fashionista society in New York, May 6th, Israel drops pamphlets on Eastern Rafah, warning of impending attacks of extreme force mirroring Israel's genocidal prosecution of the Gaza genocide since October 8th. Rafah is the southernmost corner of Gaza, holding over 1.4 million internally displaced civilians, with the eastern corner of Rafah's population at 100,000. Israel explicitly states that victims in Gaza are prohibited from traveling south towards the Egyptian border or east towards the Israeli border. They are told the only acceptable area for them to go is Al-Mawasi, a coastal Bedouin town slightly north, closer to that $320 million aid port they are constructing. Most Palestinians have been displaced many times across a bombed-out, hostile landscape due to indiscriminate killings by the IDF. These pamphlets are a nonsensical attempt by Israel to showcase an illusion of humanitarian efforts during their unrelenting genocide and ethnic cleansing of the Strip. Israel's hunt for Hamas is demonstrably a mass demolition project. There are no safe zones. There have never been any safe zones. We know that now. And if you don't, welcome to no longer living under a rock. On May 5th, in a public address, Netanyahu said, quote, "You cannot trust the promises of Gentiles, i.e. non-Jews," unquote. This is part of his attempt to discredit any notion of a ceasefire. He has before said that, you know, whether or not a ceasefire is achieved, the Rafah assault will happen. This is just one more of his rhetorical devices that he's laid in preparation for this assault. The same day, Israel also shut down Al Jazeera offices in Jerusalem. So about 24 to 36 hours before the Rafah assault and the Met Gala on Holocaust Remembrance Day, because, yeah, it's Holocaust Remembrance Day, they launched this assault and shut down one of the only news outlets that could be accused of actually doing journalism on this ongoing atrocity in the Strip. So on May 6th, as Americans' attention was focused on the useless fashionistas and glitterati at the Met Gala, Israel began its invasion of Rafah with a massive bombing campaign. Now, 3 months ago, I said the Rafah assault probably wouldn't happen. It's operationally impossible. It's not just me. Everybody that's ever been on this podcast has said it in different ways and from different perspectives. It's operationally impossible. Israel has no achievable goals. The resistance is still active in the north. In fact, after the Rafah assault was initiated, they launched 30 rockets from northern Gaza into the Gaza envelope in Israel's illegally occupied territory. So that just signals to the entire world that the resistance is still active in the north. But sometimes I forget that every decision Israel makes is in its own worst interest, and its only agenda is genocide and ethnic cleansing at all costs. It's absolute insanity, but let's break down the major developments and what they mean going forward. And we're going to spend time on this episode addressing each point. One, 20 hours ago, Hamas accepted the proposal presented by Qatar and Egypt. When mentioning these two nation states. It implies involvement from the U.S. and the brokerage of an agreement through the CIA. And we'll get into that. Arab governments, too. Arab governments were hoping Hamas would accept it since they fear the Rafah invasion as a flashpoint for civil unrest in their own populations. You know, since they're complicit in the genocide of other Arabs for the sake of Western interests in the region. Three, a ceasefire agreement will mean a new government because Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, two heavy hitters in the far right of the Knesset, will leave office, which will cause Netanyahu the majority of support. Replacing Bibi with Yair Lapid, also another lunatic who's definitely pro-genocide and pro the continuation of the war, is a United States goal. Bibi doesn't want this, so he greenlit the operation to play for time, amongst other things. Israel has not achieved any of its objectives, whereas the resistance have, having exposed, the complicity of Arab regimes, the hypocrisy of international law, the bias and rapacious greed of the Western establishment, which again, the Arab leaders are a part of. They've temporarily stalemated Saudi-Israeli normalization, and they've exposed how weak, incompetent, and immoral the Israeli army is. So someone is playing chess, and the other is playing checkers. And this conflict will be won not through strength of arms, but through geopolitical savvy. So Israel has taken over the Rafah crossing on the Egyptian border. This was expected, given that Israel has lost the war both militarily and politically and is now wholly bent on displacing and starving 2.2 million people into accepting a quote-unquote invitation to be voluntarily relocated outside of Gaza. I think they're calling it, what, voluntary emigration now? Is that what it is? Yeah, so it's notable that the IDF occupation of the Philadelphia corridor, which is the southernmost extent of Rafah and southern Gaza, is in violation of the 1979 peace accord with Egypt, since there has been no official protest from the Egyptian government, i.e. the IDF, Israel is not supposed to be on the Egyptian border. They are. Since there's been no protest from the Egyptian government, we must assume they have given Israel their blessing, which is unsurprising considering the billions Egypt has received this year from the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, various Gulf states, and the European Union. All of this being said, Israel has far exceeded its window of legitimacy. Thought-terminating cliches like Hamas, free the hostages, are beyond ringing hollow at this point. We've had videos posted on social media today from Israeli accounts saying, of the hostage family, say, release the hostages or Israel will burn. That went viral earlier this morning. This has been a geopolitical disaster for the United States, and the U.S. has lost significant leverage in the Middle East in particular and the global South in general. CIA Director William Burns continues to try and broker a U.S. deal between Hamas and Israel, one which Hamas accepted and Israel refused. Forget idiotic congressmen like Tom Cotton, who doesn't know the difference between China and Singapore. The greater U.S. establishment wants this war to end, if only in order to safeguard U.S. strategic interests around the globe. So in my personal estimation, the game is up. Israel is just treading water, hoping for the political situation to change, which it won't. The U.S. still supports Israel and will do what is necessary to fund it. However, the current state of the war is not sustainable. And once a ceasefire happens, Israel will lose for real, for real. And before we jump in to the bulk of this episode, I just wanted to reiterate the fact that William Burns, as director of the CIA, is trying to actually broker a ceasefire deal through Qatar and Egypt that's actually kind of favorable to Hamas. But then you have Biden going on stage today, May 7th, as part of the Holocaust Remembrance Ceremony, and saying something completely different, that he's telegraphing his ironclad support for Israel. However, at the same time, U.S. foreign policy isn't necessarily lining up with that complete narrative, despite funding packages and despite unconditional support. So I'm going to play this really problematic clip of Biden, and we're just going to jump right into it. This is from the Holocaust Remembrance speech.
On the sacred Jewish holiday, the terrorist group Hamas unleashed the deadliest day of the Jewish people since the Holocaust. Driven by ancient desire to wipe out the Jewish people off the face of the earth, over 1,200 innocent people, babies, parents, grandparents, slaughtered in their kibbutz, massacred at a music festival, brutally raped, mutilated, and sexually assaulted. Thousands more carrying wounds, bullets and shrapnel from the memory of that terrible day they endured. Hundreds taken hostage, including survivors of the Shoah. Now, here we are, not 75 years later, but just 7.5 months later. And people are already forgetting. They're already forgetting that Hamas unleashed this terror. It was Hamas that brutalized Israelis. It was Hamas who took and continues to hold hostages. I have not forgotten, nor have you. And we will not forget.
Okay, so a lot of problematic shit going on in that, you know, from not recognizing Palestinian suffering to characterizing what happened on October 7th as an ancient desire to kill Jews. Whoa.
But besides before we get into the problematic stuff, let's notice the positive in that. He finished, I don't know how many sentences there. That was like 5 sentences he actually went through, like, coherently. That's pretty impressive. Just saying, pointing out the positive there. Other than that, yeah, everything he said was just fucking propaganda and shitty, like the babies, the mutilations, emphasizing those. I don't know if he got the memo about the New York Times article, Screams Without Words being completely debunked. But then again, it was impressive, though, for him to get through those sentences.
Yeah, I like, or don't like, but I like how much I hate the let's not forget, but it's not 75 years, it's 7 months. So like in the same sentence, he's like, you know, I can't believe they're already forgetting 7 months ago, the horrible attack. And it's like, yeah, but you started that sentence by discounting the whole effing Nakba, right? And the entire beginning of this entire thing. Like that's a wild thing to do in one sentence. That's just really fucking wild. And then obviously, you know, talking about Hamas having hostages and ignoring, you know, 75 years of people being put in military prisons with no charges, you know, minors, et cetera.
He put shocking. In the key ingredients, though. Rape.
Yeah.
Babies.
Yeah.
And hostages. Those three key ingredients, you get that perfect propaganda stew.
And you know, it's a major skit to sustain the Israeli narrative, right? There's nothing between what he just said in this speech and his borrowed talking points. You know, the weaponization of the Holocaust, dead babies, etc. You know, all of it's to sustain the image that the U.S. still stands behind Israel, even though William Burns literally just offered Hamas the fucking deal they wanted, and Hamas accepted, and then Israel shit canned the whole thing. I mean, we're going to get into that, but you know, it's this massive performance that's happening. I'm kind of flabbergasted by, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that it still works. But yeah, the fact that they're not changing tack at all is mind boggling to me.
Well, it just goes to show you like that the New York Times article, even though disproven, it doesn't matter that it was disproven, right? They're going to continue to repeat the lies. They're going to repeat them often enough.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have the president of the United States come out and say it in front of the whole country months after it's been grossly disproven on multiple accounts in multiple, you know, specific data points, proven to be false, proven to be, you know, Hasbara bullshit, idea of bullshit. But it doesn't matter because the president's going to repeat it. New York Times isn't going to retract it. So, you know.
Yeah, the New York Times article served its purpose. The whole purpose of it was to get everybody emotionally riled up at the moment of the invasion of Gaza. After the invasion of Gaza and everything is rubbled, yeah, you can go ahead and debunk it now. But it served its purpose at the perfect time. The only thing it does, the only victory we get out of it being debunked is that all the people who are still arguing that point on our level that aren't making decisions, we can just be like, hey, you're full of shit. And make them look like jackasses, but other than that, it served its purpose.
Absolutely, repeat that lie often enough, right?
Yeah, it becomes Israel. So, I wanted to first talk about this Hamas accepting the ceasefire conditions. Now, we don't have the exact language; we probably won't have it right now, but. what we're looking at is this is from Reuters reporting, which is not the most unbiased, but it's not horrible. So the Israeli official speaking with Reuters acknowledged that the invasion of Rafah was being used to pressure Hamas to accept a deal on Israel's terms. Obviously, that's their basic doctrine, is the Dyer doctrine, put pressure on civilians to get the militants to give concessions. Rafah was being used to pressure Hamas to accept a deal on Israel's terms. That's also why they're weaponizing famine. Now they're weaponizing direct violence. Reuters wrote that the official claimed Israel's assault on Rafah had pushed Hamas into hastily setting out its latest proposal. But the agreement accepted by Hamas was first proposed by Egyptian and Qatari mediators, brokered by the freaking CIA. It involved a halt to the fighting and exchange of some 130 Israeli captives in Gaza for hundreds of Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. The Israeli official speaking with Reuters claimed Israel would not accept the proposal because Hamas had stretched it to unacceptable extremes. However, another official said Hamas had only made minor changes that did not affect the main parts of the proposal. So on April 29th, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said the proposal was extraordinarily generous on Israel's part, whatever, how they're going to spin it. But I think it's significant that, you know, Israel has been telegraphing this Rafah assault. It seems like Hamas knew that they were going to assault no matter what. So they just accepted it on the eve of the assault just so Israel could protect, like, really, predictably, I'm not wording right now, really predictably refuse it. So it was just another PR gain for Hamas because, you know, they knew that Israel's never going to accept it. So that's just my surface shallow take on that whole drama going on.
I've seen some interesting commentary. One from I have to go place him because I don't know where in the Israeli sphere he is, but I saw a commentator basically arguing that this was a Netanyahu, you know, they tried to get in a better negotiating position, right? By, you know, by lining up forces, doing some initial strikes, lining up forces, getting them ready to, you know, telegraph an invasion of Rafah to jockey for position in the negotiating table. But I don't know how much sense that makes. I don't know what you guys think about that, Greg. I'm more inclined to believe the version that you're talking about personally.
Well, I mean, they had a massive mobilization. We could see it on satellite imagery about moving mech armored columns into the south of Gaza, redeploying forces, infantry forces and stuff. And then it initiated with a bombing campaign. They started bombing a few days ago, and now they really ratcheted up in the past 24 hours.
So, I mean more like in terms of what changes would they hope to affect potentially? Like, they're going to do hostage exchange. That's going to happen. Ceasefire's going to stay on it. Like, what language was in there that they could possibly get removed by posturing like this? I don't know. That's the part that didn't seem to make sense to me in that analysis.
Go ahead. Well, I was always curious about, like, what is their official explanation for targets? Like, what exactly are they attacking in Rafah? Is it a claimed entry to a tunnel? Is it a fortress of a building that they're claiming Hamas is in? I know it's all bullshit, but what I'm just curious is, what is their official claim of targets? I want to hear it.
I thought it was just having brown people in the car.
Besides that.
Yeah, I mean, based off of their targeting of the World Central Kitchen, yeah, there was a Palestinian on board, so I guess you have to drop three Hellfires on three separate targets. But anyways, they did. You know, the IDF's official social media platform put out a video about how they're doing everything. So you can rest assured that they're being the most humane army in the world. They actually found a new guy. He has a very soothing voice. Let's listen.
Situation in Rafah. Yesterday, the IDF called on Gazan residents and international organizations in eastern Rafah to temporarily evacuate and move a few miles away to the expanded humanitarian area in En Mawasi. There, we have coordinated an increase in field hospitals, tents, and quantities of food, water, and medicine. Our message to Gazan civilians was communicated clearly through flyers, text messages, phone calls, and media broadcasts in Arabic. The quick movement of civilians away from areas that were under Hamas's control enabled us to advance. Last night, IDF ground troops began a precise, intelligence-based counterterrorism operation in limited areas in eastern Rafah, an operation against Hamas terrorists and infrastructure there. The troops are operating in a specific defined area where residents have already been evacuated. In the first hours of the operation, IDF troops eliminated 20 terrorists in the area, as well as an explosive vehicle threatening our troops, and located several terror tunnel shafts. Following intelligence indicating that the Gazan side of the Rafah crossing was being abused by the Hamas terror organizations, we established operational control of the Gazan side of the crossing, where special forces are currently scanning the area. As we continue our operations against Hamas, we are ensuring that humanitarian aid will continue to flow into Gaza for Gaza.
Okay, so yeah, that's enough of that.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's a lot smoother, man. He almost had me. It's a far cry from the there is a list guy.
He's from the double chop school of public speaking, though. You know, he's constantly the.
Yeah. So if you're just listening to the audio, this guy the entire time was just, I don't know, like ebbing and flowing both of his hands in front of the camera. I guess he was trying to do some like basic hypnosis, but it didn't work.
Mention the tree grove behind him. It's a very beautiful Mediterranean tree grove.
Yeah. But you know, beyond the tree grove and the double hand knife handing shit he's got going on, you know how all of this is bullshit. I found just one article from last month, literally 27 days ago, published in Ynet. Ynet News is the English language sister site to Ynet, Israel's largest and most popular news and content website. Ynet News is part of the predominant Yedidoth media group. The organization has no registered commitments politically. So as this guy literally says in the video, they're being relocated to Khan Yunis because, you know, Khan Yunis is being cleared. Well, let me just pull up this article. Give me one second. There we go. Yes. As Hamas reclaims Khan Yunis, Israeli officer warns a protracted battle ahead. After the IDF withdrawal, terror group moves to reassert control of southern Gaza City in absence of alternative. Veteran officers estimate Hamas will be defeated by 2026 or 2027 at earliest. So they've already reoccupied Khan Yunis. You know, the Rafah assault is not where the last 3 to 6 battalions, depending on their number fluctuates depending on Netanyahu's mood of Hamas are located. So yeah, that kind of just really, I mean, there's a lot of ways to debunk what the IDF is saying about the this Rafah operation, but that's just my favorite one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they didn't clear that out in the last week.
Yeah, no, because they haven't been in the Khan Yunis in the last week, not really in any force. They've been in that Netzarim corridor along the Wadi Gaza, you know, that connects from the Gaza envelope, bisecting North and South Gaza and leading to where the aid port is.
So. I did think the Rafah crossing seizure was only a matter of time. I'm honestly surprised that they didn't do that, you know, a month ago. I assume they couldn't, but I thought they were going to do that right out the gate.
Yeah, and what he means by that is the southern border between Gaza and Egypt, which no Israeli troops are supposed to occupy in accordance with the Camp David Accords from like 1979. But yeah, they've done that. So they claim to be seizing that border because Hamas has tunnels that they're using to ship in weapons, which is true. But they're not going to find all the tunnels, and that's just an excuse to make sure people don't escape into Egypt or the Sinai if they don't get out by the Egyptians.
I like how you said that they have their special forces watching the border, because that's what you do with special forces, right? fix site security on the Egyptian border.
I mean, but honestly, they refuse to do special operations, so yeah. I think most of their quote unquote operators are pulling border security.
I think by special forces, they mean somebody who actually knows how to operate the armored vehicle that they're driving this time, instead of four assholes that jumped in.
But you know, they could, when they get home, they can tell their they can tell the girls at the nightclubs, hey, yeah, I was in a special operations force at the southern border between on Rafah, between Egypt and Gaza, and they can just make all kinds of shit up about badass battles they got into with Hamas.
I mean, that's just generally military shit from any army. The big difference, the salient difference, is you're in an army that's committing genocide. So that will not age well, and that will not get you laid in like 3 years.
In a visa.
So, yeah. So, I mean, we can kind of understand why they're doing this. Israel has not achieved any of its objectives, whereas, you know, the resistance has. Israel, what did they say at the beginning? That they were going to go in and defeat Hamas. According to their own... Oh, yeah, hostages. No hostages have been... Well, one has, or two have, apparently. There's been some conjecture about, like, some of the disinformation and, you know, contradictions going on about those hostage rescue operations. But they've demonstrably killed, like, over a dozen hostages.
If Hamas is flexing and reconsolidating on Khan Yunis, which is what, five kilometers northeast of Rafah,
yeah,
that means that Hamas still has enough mobility to do that. They do not control the zone. They do not control all the avenues and maneuver lanes there, which tells me that they don't control shit. If you can't stop them reinfiltrating and you know, a built up area like that. Yeah, your objective clearly has not been achieved. They're still completely mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got hundreds of miles of tunnels still intact. I'm pretty sure they have air conditioning in those tunnels too.
Wait, yeah. You got to understand what they're saying, right? Because the article Greg referenced, they're talking about they're reapplying pressure and they don't think they're going to be clear till 2026 or 2027. So that means not only is Hamas able to move, it means they're able to move enough material and personnel to start reapplying pressure outside of Rafah in the north, right? Because Khan Yunis is, you know, a little bit north of that Rafah, yeah. Anyway.
So. Yeah, not only just in Khan Yunis, which is in the south, they literally, like, less than 24 hours ago, shot 30 rockets out of the north. So yeah. Nothing's clear. I don't think you can make an argument from a military perspective that they've secured any areas beyond a small strip of land, a small corridor along the Wadi Gaza that bisects north and south and limits people's freedom of movement and also secures a trade lane for future shenanigans, which are beyond the scope of this episode. But the narrative that a Rafah assault is requisite to defeat Hamas has been proven ludicrous from the perspective that Hamas is not only shooting rockets out of the north, reoccupying the south, but they've even organized citizens patrol and have established a tax system throughout Gaza to control prices throughout the damn strip. So, yeah.
30 rockets is not insignificant either. It may sound like that to some people, but, you know, from personal experience, when you have the level of ISR assets of, like, drones and observation and intelligence, signal intelligence stuff that the Israelis have over Gaza, similar forces struggled to fire single mortar rounds, you know, 3 and 4 mortar rounds at a U.S. base, right, without getting shot back. And they had to go through a lot of, you know, hoops and delayed triggering and stuff to get that done. Shooting 30 rockets off in an area with this much eyes on it and this much coverage means that you have significant capacity still in that zone.
That means you had to mobilize the actual platform that they shot from. Mm-hmm. You were able to sneak it out in the open, load them, target, you know, aim them and then set them off and then get back in the tunnels. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's incredible considering one thing that we never mention when we talk about military operations in Gaza are the satellites. Nobody ever talks about satellites concerning this whole thing. The technology in these satellites, how they're able to zoom in, what they're able to scan. That to me is the most bewildering part about the military operations in there.
100% agree, Mark. And you gotta remember too, the satellites are not just taking real time streams, they're recording, right? So if I go out and place something and then I run back to a certain spot, they can run video of these things back sometimes. Frequently they can backtrace what's going on. So the fact that they can get 30 rockets out in the open, to your point, set them up and fire them, that's a lot of capacity still. You do not control that area. You have not removed Hamas clearly. So
yeah, and this is why, as of, let me see how many hours ago, I don't know, a couple hours ago, a team of mid-ranking Israeli officials will again travel to Cairo in the coming hours to see if Hamas will agree to changes in the latest ceasefire offer. Reuters again reporting, while confirming that Israel would not accept the current proposal. This delegation is made up of mid-level envoys, so it's, you know, obviously the negotiations are going to be far from finalized at this point, but they're still ongoing, at least performatively. Were there a credible deal in the offing, the principals would be heading the delegation. So a senior Israeli official told Reuters, referring to the senior Mossad and Shin Bet officials leading the negotiations for Israel. So yeah, it's ongoing. But you know what's, again, mind-boggling is like the lack of pressure from the Biden administration. Yeah, they can say all the right words, you know, publicly, but this is having massive strategic ramifications for United States interests in the region. So one of the things that, you know, we need to come to expect, one of the casualties is this, is like we need to like dial down expectations on a U.S.-Saudi security pact. You know, expect a less for less outcome from any forthcoming U.S.-Saudi relationships. Israel's war on Gaza has hampered Washington's plans to push normalization with Tel Aviv and pull Riyadh away from the Russia-China sphere of influence. You know, Arab leaders are definitely complicit, a lot of them, in what's going on in Palestine because they're not pushing back. But they can't not at least pretend to give a shit. So even slightly, even though they're kind of complicit, and this is one of the points I was making earlier and that, you know, outlets like the Cradle Media have made before in the past, is they at least have to performatively care about Gaza, and that is actually hurting U.S. strategic interests as well.
Yeah, I saw, was it the Biden administration delayed the report from the State Department again on whether, you know, whether or not crimes are being committed, or, you know, Israeli prosecution of the war, et cetera. They delayed it again for reasons, of course. Greg, I found that quote from Ori Goldberg, is the Israeli political commentator.
Uh-huh.
And okay. He said, based on Israel's record in these affairs and past wars, this is last minute posturing. This is an attempt to appear tough and also an attempt to appease Netanyahu's base, the right-wing elements inside Israel. But the fact that an Israeli delegation is now in Cairo for talks shows it has little maneuverability left. And then he said, I assume that he means by the Americans, but I'm not sure. He says, I think it's been made very clear to Netanyahu that he stands to pay a very, very significant personal price if something doesn't happen very soon. Quote, the Israeli-American relationship is probably the worst it's ever been. There is no victory in this for Israel. None of the goals set out have been met. The management of the war has been catastrophic, to say the least. I thought that was an interesting blow.
I mean, yeah, I think everyone's becoming, well, a lot of people, a significant amount of people are becoming disillusioned with Netanyahu's government. You know, but they've been trying to paint this narrative for the past couple months. It's like they're going to throw Bibi under the bus.
Yeah.
Try to say like he's the Adolf Hitler of, you know, the Gaza genocide. But then again, Hitler was just one person in an entirely compromised, fucked up system. So they're going to try to spin that and replace him with, again, Yair Lapid, who's, you know, gone to Washington, had private meetings with the White House. He's also a guy who said, quote, if the media is unbiased, it serves Hamas, unquote. So he's not like this leftist opposition leader who's going to save the country or change anything.
I saw this whole, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald treatment with Netanyahu back in October. I totally called that shit. I knew that it was, they're going to wrap him up in a bow tie, kick him out. And that was going to be our off ramp for culpability. I saw that way back then and people thought, no, so much doubt was thrown in my way. But I want to get back to what you're saying about the Arab leadership, or, you know, supposedly, you know, going back against Israel. How much of Turkey's actions do you see as performative?
Well, you know, Turkey has its own vested interest. It's trying to become it is a big player in the oil scene. But I think what's most regionally relevant is not necessarily Turkey, even though Turkey's like the predominant military power. in the region. I think it has to do with the Arab nations.
Besides the Arab nations for a second, just the Turkish one, how do you read that? Are Turkey cutting off Israel officially? And
I mean, I don't think they're going to do it completely. Saudi's not going to. No one in the region is going to cut off Israel completely.
Just double checking. You have the same opinion as mine. That was my read too.
They have acted independent of NATO before in the past. There have been times where the political situation got frosty enough that Turkey banned the use of U.S. aircraft of certain types, combat aircraft, et cetera, from flying out of Turkish air bases or through Turkish airspace, which is someone closely in that sphere is odd, but they don't always follow the leader, on this stuff. They've defied, U.S. interests before.
Yeah. What's more stark, and I'd say what's more regionally and strategically important is the Arab nations, because that's what people expect to respond and band behind another group of Arab peoples within the region, but they're not, at least the governments aren't. So this is kind of becoming a flashpoint in an area of concern for Arab governments like Jordan, Lebanon, big ones for Egypt, Saudi Arabia, because there's, an expectation that they would intercede and not be these pawns of the West, which people are seeing. But one of the things the Arab governments are concerned about and why they wanted Israel and Hamas to achieve a ceasefire is because, with the last decade's Arab uprisings, AKA there's nothing they fear more than an Arab Spring 2.0
revolution.
Yeah. The ones where
Saudi doesn't.
Yeah. No,
Saudi doesn't want to see another intifada, but I think that by banning criticism of Israel, I think MBS is ultimately assuring that for his future.
Yeah, well, we don't know how widespread that's going to be yet. So
we don't.
I saw Queen Rania's interviews, and I was wondering who the target audience for that was. Was it, Americans or, obviously not a domestic population because it was English language based, but yeah.
Yeah, so there's a massive disappointment. And, Israel has its own insurance policy with Arab governments because, Israel provides them with all the spyware and all the tech that goes into monitoring their people. And it's a longstanding insurance network for Israel. And again, Arab leaders have to balance this tension between, wanting to ensure their own domestic security against their own populations, but not push it too far in terms of getting in bed with Israel that, there's an uprising. So, they're in a predicament, and this failure of a ceasefire is only going to exacerbate their anxiety over civil unrest and civil disobedience. We'll see how that plays out in the coming days. And a lot of this, I think, will be determined by how brutal the Rafah assault is and if there's no brakes put on it. But based on that propaganda, I mean, it's night two of this assault. It's hard to get a good picture on the ground. I just know that, I have like friends who are in contact with doctors on the ground in Gaza. Right now, about 30 minutes ago, we're hearing bombs and prayers, and there's definitely violence going on the ground. There's mass, not deportation, but dislocation, so it's absolute chaos. There's no plan. I also don't think that Israel has enough people on the ground to, clear through that space, especially with all those abandoned tents, rubble. It's not going to be an effective operation. It's mostly performative, just like a lot of their military operations have been thus far. Because again, they're still in the north. Hamas is and Islamic Jihad is and other resistance fronts are still in the south. And why would Rafah be any different? So I think it's hard to see this beyond anything that could, to push people to the north towards an aid port, which, Benjamin Netanyahu, members of the Knesset have said, voluntary emigration, what a great point to disembark from. So I don't think it could actually be effectuated that way because it's way too transparent. I don't think Israel has enough time, but I think that's like, what they're building towards.
The pier is done. It hasn't been floated in place, but it's built.
Yeah. So that's a whole crazy thing too, because what U.S. troops are supposed to be on the port, guaranteeing its security, but they're not going to step foot in Gaza.
Did you see Lloyd? You know, the wild, bizarro world that we live in now, where I actually agreed with Matt Gaetz.
Yeah,
for once, like that was insane. But you know, Matt Gaetz was, you know, I want to spit after I say his name, but you know, he was grilling Lloyd Austin, and he's like, yeah, "You're telling us there's not going to be any U.S. boots on the ground in Gaza, but there's going to be boots on a pier, and if they get shot at on the pier, yeah, they're going to return fire." And the guy, and General Austin's like, "Yeah, they're allowed to protect themselves." And so he's like, "So there's not boots on the ground?" He goes, "He's like, no." He's like, "But there's going to be boots on a pier attached to the ground." And yeah, it was a weird exchange, but I mean, again, good point from a lunatic, but a good point.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows why Travis, well, if you're not living in America, Matt Gaetz is a far right asshole who has a lot of inappropriate relationships with dubiously aged girls, not women. So yeah, he's not exactly a great guy, but of course the upside down world we live in. I was like, huh, yeah, Matt. I hate.
It's a really good question, Matt. You know,
yeah.
You should stop, you know, trying to hook up with 16-year-old girls, but that's a great question.
You know, one of Israel's lesser sins is they made me agree sometimes with Andrew Tate and Matt Gaetz. I freaking hate it.
Or Tucker Carlson now and then. Or fucking Candace Owens.
Oh, I know. Oh man, that one was wild.
That one hurts. Yeah. So this is where it stands, I think, right now. I think tomorrow we're going to have a better idea, because we're still doing research on points like Israel commits to reporting being done by Haaretz, like Israel commits to limit Rafah operation and grant control of the Rafah crossing to a private U.S. firm, taking Egypt out of the equation and putting it into U.S. contractors potentially.
Are they talking about military contractors? Are they
going
to hand off the Rafah crossing to like Blackwater's descent, you know, like Z or something?
I think it's Academy now. So information's still coming in on who it's going to be, but it's private contractors. So the Egyptians and Americans initially proposed any wide ranging operations by the Israel Defense Forces in Rafah would lead to heavy civilian casualties in a densely populated area. So I guess contractors like Academy might be better. This is still a developing story that we're going to focus on tomorrow. But
I heard rumors that they were going to be contracting out to Indian forces or Indian volunteers. I've heard rumors about it. Don't know if it's true. I don't know if you guys heard anything like that.
I haven't heard anything like that. Why would it be Indian? I don't think anyone would agree with that. They're not even a regional player. Indian workers.
Indian workers, but also like Indian Indian mercenaries. Not talking about their forces, their official like forces, but Indian mercenaries. Just a rumor.
From where? I'm now curious, because that's insane.
That's what I heard. What I heard, the grapevine.
What grapevine?
I'll tell you later.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So that is, just have to say, that is completely unconfirmed and not rooted in any piece of reporting.
No, yeah. Like I said, rumors.
Okay. Well,
yeah, dude, right. It's supposed to be a U.S. military contractor, U.S. mercenary contractor, according to Haaretz. They're saying a U.S. American security firm that employs former special forces. You tell me who that is. There's only a couple names to do that.
Triple Canopy, Dynacor, Academy. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, all the sociopaths. So we're gonna get into that. There's also rumors that the Egyptian government is petitioning Bedouin and the Sinai to prevent Palestinian refugees from coming in, because obviously the Bedouin wouldn't want a large refugee population on their land. We're still trying to track down that story, but let's not get excited about it, because there's no really good leads. And as you know, the Egyptian government has been fighting a low intensity counterinsurgency against some Bedouin militants in the Sinai. So this is really still up in the air. The entire operation is confused without any achievable goals and is insane. So expect a lot of conflicting information, a lot of wild rumors. And it's going to be bad, and it's not going to work out for Israel. It just seems like everything they're doing is in their own worst interest. Like, how does any of this help them in the long term? It's like no one's thinking strategically. Everyone's just reacting to a bad situation that they can't get out of. And in the meantime, Palestinians are going to suffer even more. And they have this nebulous idea that they're going to voluntarily emigrate everybody out of the strip and turn it into a second Dubai. But what? The resistance is still going to be active. There's so many problems with this plot. There's so many holes in the plot. So
The REMAX listing for those properties is going to have a huge caveat at the end of it.
May contain Hamas. May contain a mass grave.
Yeah. So, okay. We're going to go ahead and post this update again. Once we get more on the security contractors and the Rafah crossing and whatever's going on in the Sinai, that should be tomorrow afternoon, Wednesday, the 8th. So thanks so much for listening. This, we're going to be doing this regularly because this is, again, an insane situation that's very dynamic and no one can predict what's going to happen. So cheers and thanks so much, guys, for coming on. Be back tomorrow.